Simon Marks is in Washington, D.C. Two stories, really. Let's begin with the UK end, if we may. How big a story is Peter Mandelson's sack? It's probably too early to say, but how big a story has the saga been in the last 24 hours in the States, Simon?
Well, it's been a big story here in Washington, D.C., James, of course, because Peter Mandelson was a noted figure and prominent character in this city. I mean, once you get outside the confines of the nation's capital, he's just another ambassador, but certainly here extremely well known and noted for the ingratiating, frankly, unctuous way in which he had treated Donald Trump every time that he was in Donald Trump's orbit. I mean, I can only think of one other official who has engaged in more flattery of the American president on camera, and that's NATO Secretary General Mark Rutte. But Peter Mandelson definitely gave him a run for his money, and even over the weekend in what I suspect was his final speech as UK ambassador to the United States at the Ditchley Foundation back there in the UK, Peter Mandelson was articulating the view that the president may not follow the traditional rule book or conventional practice, but he is a risk taker in a world where a business as usual approach no longer works. I mean, the centrality of his message was a reflection of what the Prime Minister's approach to Donald Trump has been throughout this year, which is you've got to flatter him, you've got to work with him, you never confront him, certainly in public. I mean, it was notable that Sir Keir Starmer was not, like Friedrich Merz or Emmanuel Macron, confrontational with Donald Trump when they were all here alongside Volodymyr Zelensky after that disastrous Alaska summit between President Trump and Vladimir Putin. Keir Starmer wants to position himself, and Mandelson was the architect of it, as the European leader that Donald Trump likes to work with. And so here we are, 1 week before that second state visit to the UK, which itself is a massive hostage to fortune for Number 10, with Number 10 now having to admit that the much vaunted vetting operation of security of Sir Peter Mandelson, Lord Mandelson, that they were talking about yesterday, in fact, was apparently not as ironclad as they suggested it was 24 hours ago, and that they've now learned new stuff, thanks to the documents gathered initially by Bloomberg, that have led them to believe that he's got to go. Which means, if you follow that argument to its logical conclusion, that Lord Mandelson has been a bit of a security risk for the UK while he has been serving here as the UK's ambassador to the United States. Because if the British government hadn't seen all of this damning evidence against him with regard to his relationship to Jeffrey Epstein, but other governments might have been aware of its existence, I mean, it's not drawing a ludicrous inference to think that Peter Mandelson may have found himself potentially in a somewhat compromising position. So, I think it's clearly a disaster in the bilateral relationship.
And just to back up a little bit, I have been a little bit baffled by the warmth with which Donald Trump speaks of Sir Keir Starmer. It seems slightly at odds with almost every other aspect of his worldview and his public performance. But you believe that that is largely down to Mandelson's interventions and Mandelson's management?
Well, I think that the policy, of course, is set by the Prime Minister. There's no doubt about that. But he picked Lord Mandelson for a reason. And it was a curious choice, given that Peter Mandelson had been the EU Trade Commissioner. I mean, not someone whose CV necessarily would lend itself to tremendous amounts of admiration from Trump insiders. But he turned to him because he thought that Peter Mandelson had the guile to win Donald Trump over and to try and avoid that confrontation that the Prime Minister, at least over the short term, is eager either to avoid or simply kick into the long grass. I mean, the problem with all of this, James, is that we're a week away from that state visit. And the second that state visit is over and Donald Trump boards Air Force One to fly back to the United States with his much coveted picture of him and the king tucked into his suit pocket, at that point, we are going to discover very quickly, I suspect, that it's going to become open season on the UK in terms of the bilateral relationship? Because, and there's a link here between Peter Mandelson and the Charlie Kirk killing yesterday, people like Charlie Kirk have been relentlessly telling Donald Trump that free speech is dead in the UK, that Keir Starmer is leading an authoritarian government, that he's taken Britain into the abyss. Those are Charlie Kirk's words just over the last 3 months. And as soon as this state visit is over, the risk for the British government is that Donald Trump starts absolutely accentuating the argument that free speech in the UK is in retreat. And of course, he's being buoyed in taking that position by the man who was here in Washington, D.C. last week, a man that Donald Trump himself has mused would be a great UK ambassador to the United States, the Member of Parliament for Clacton, Nigel Farage. So the die, I fear, may be cast for the future of this bilateral relationship, no matter how much people like Lord Mandelson try to fluff up Donald Trump and assure him that actually he really is one of the world's great leading statesmen.
Which is kind of a piece with what I said about his current attitude to Starmer being rather at odds with every other aspect of the world view. You think the planets will probably align once Mandelson is removed from the picture and Trump will fall into line with all of the big MAGA figures who are spouting this nonsense about the United Kingdom's relationship with free speech.
Well, if the state visit is the big card you've got to play, because you know how much Donald Trump covets time with the royal family, and not just the king, also with Prince William. He's got a strong relationship, he says, with Prince William. If that's the strongest card in your arsenal, to play that within the first year of a four-year Trump administration means that you're not going to have many cards to play on the other side of the state visit. And these voices in Donald Trump's ear about free speech in the UK are similar to voices that have been in Donald Trump's ear about supposedly negative developments in other countries around the world that have doomed those bilateral relationships. Look at what's happened to the US relationship with South Africa, based on misinformation largely that has been whispered into Donald Trump's ear by his acolytes. This free speech issue is not going to go away, and it runs every risk after the state visit of becoming an even greater irritant in the transatlantic bilateral relationship.
You've been demoted by Alex, Simon. Alex has been in touch to say, brilliant analysis by the current caller. So I do have the best callers in the business, but just for the avoidance of doubt, Simon Marks is our Washington editor. And while I have you, and before you go, obviously the news agenda in the United States is completely dominated by the killing of Charlie Kirk. I don't know how to phrase this question, really, but how significant do you think it is that the authorities don't seem to have any handle at all on who did it or where they've gone?
Well, I think it's very significant and very concerning for the political class writ large, because as much as Donald Trump last night characterised this in purely partisan terms, an extraordinary address from the Oval Office, talking about the radical left contributing to the shooting, vowing to find those people responsible for political violence as well as the organisations that fund it and support it. It's talking about a witch hunt, yes, against potentially only left-leaning organizations in the United States, accusing liberal criticism of conservatives for being directly responsible for the terrorism that we're seeing in our country today. It must stop right now. As much as he wants to cast political violence as being a left-on-right issue, first, we have no idea who committed this killing. Yeah. The FBI clearly doesn't. They were appealing for tips last night. They don't often do that when they've got a strong and solid lead. So we don't know what the motivation for this assassination was. We do know that the assassin who tried to kill Donald Trump the first time around in the American presidential election last year, the Butler, Pennsylvania attack, just like the Charlie Kirk killing, appears to have been mounted from a rooftop overlooking the venue. you how on earth that happened. Mm. Only six police officers yesterday in Utah to police an event with 3,000 people coming to hear one of the most controversial figures in American politics speaking. Huge questions about that. But we don't know the motivation for this attack. And it comes just weeks after, and this runs completely counter to Donald Trump's narrative, two Democratic Party lawmakers in Minnesota were killed by a lone gunman, killed along with their spouses. Donald Trump at the time didn't attend either of the lawmakers' funerals, wouldn't even call the governor of Minnesota, Tim Walz, who, of course, was Kamala Harris's running mate in the last presidential election, describing Tim Walz as a whack job. He said, I could call him, but it why would I spend my time doing that? Language that arguably fueled the polarization in American politics here. So it is deeply concerning that there is a gunman, at least one, on the loose, that we don't know what that gunman's motivation is, and that we are now in a political season where people from all over the spectrum are about to make public appearances. The former Vice President Kamala Harris is about to begin a book tour to promote her memoir, 107 Days, about her failed presidential campaign. And only 10 days ago, President Trump withdrew her Secret Service security protection. Now, he says it's all the radical left that is fueling this political violence in the United States, but that simply doesn't reflect the reality of a deeply troubling rise in political violence in this country that today, given that we have no idea of the motivation for this latest attack, leaves political speakers on both sides of the political equation here. And there's no minimizing the tragedy of what took place in Utah yesterday. It leaves speakers on both sides of the political aisle here deeply at risk.
Simon Marks, thank you. It's been a horrible story in so many ways, and you've reminded us of some of the ramifications and significant factors of it quite perfectly. Thank you, as always. Simon Marks, LBC's Washington editor there, talking to us about the two big stories of the moment, one involving the killing of the commentator Charlie Kirk, and one, of course, the sacking this morning of the ambassador to Washington, the UK's ambassador to the United States of America, Lord Mandelson.